The next day, I'm sitting at my house and I look out the window and I see Steven, my sister, and my parents walking up the steps. Oh. And I knew the jig was up. And yeah. They came in and said, you got two options. Yeah. Everything you see in front of you is either gone or you go pack a bag. We're going to go to detox, spend 90 days in rehab.
Yeah.
And the first question I have is, well, can I at least drink after this?
Yeah.
I'll stop doing the pills. And they're like, go pack your freaking bag.
Yeah.
Like, so I spent a week in detox. And then I went to a treatment facility where I would unknowingly spend the next 4 months.
Welcome to another edition of TM3 Impact. I am excited because today we have Liesl Hsu, the author of Girl Dad, here today to talk about the process and just her life getting to this point to write this amazing book. Welcome, Liesl.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here today.
Super excited to have you. So let's jump right in. Cliff Note version.
Sure.
Kind of tell me your San Antonio story. How did you come to live in the greater San Antonio area?
Sure. So both my parents are from San Antonio. They actually graduated from Churchill. My dad was part of the state champ, 76 state champ Churchill Chargers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they think that's still pretty cool today. So I was born in Houston. We moved back to San Antonio when I was little and grew up here. Graduated from Clark High School, went to Texas Tech. Go Red Raiders.
Red Raiders, yes.
And my husband and I are both from San Antonio. After a few years after college, we lived in Dallas, came back to San Antonio, got married, and the rest is history. So
there
here
you go.
We are. Yeah.
So did you meet him in San Antonio or did you meet him at Texas Tech?
So oddly enough, we both went to Clark. I'm 2 grades older.
Oh.
So I like to joke and say like, yeah, you knew who I was. I was a senior when you were a sophomore.
Oh,
So we kind of knew who each other were, but I did that fun victory lap at Tech. You know, I was on the 5-year plan.
Yep.
Just kind of squeezed it out a little bit more. And my sister was a freshman when I was in my 5th year.
Okay.
And we kind of started, she was good friends with Steven, my husband, and his buddies. And we kind of just started hanging out. And
yes.
The rest was history.
Very cool. So yeah. I went to Wayland Baptist.
Okay.
Which is just north of Tech.
Yes.
So we would go, that's where we would go to quote unquote party because everything was in Lubbock. Yeah.
Yep.
That was a crazy place to go because I was in Plainview, Texas at Wayland Baptist and the name said it all. Plainview. Yeah. There was nothing to do.
I know about Plainview.
You know about Plainview. Yes. Okay. So now you graduate, you come back to San Antonio and then what did you start doing once you got back to San Antonio?
So we started planning a wedding.
Yeah.
Obviously, I had kind of put together a little PR consulting firm. My background is in public relations and marketing.
Okay.
And did that for a little while and then kind of started our first couple years of marriage. And then there's a little bit of a backstory that goes into the time that we met after college and what those first few years looked like.
Well, so this PR company, tell me a little bit about that PR. You come out of Tech, you're like, I want to start a company. Let's go. Did you work for anybody before?
Yes. I had worked for a big firm in Dallas called Weber Shandwick. And then I had done some consulting for a few boutique firms and stuff. And I decided to kind of just put my own together. I actually had a lot of real estate clients at the time doing social media management and events and some of that stuff. But like I said, we can dig into my backstory a little bit. And
absolutely.
We'll talk about,
let's go dive right in. So tell me a little bit of the backstory. Yes.
Yeah. So I grew up here in San Antonio. Our upbringing was rooted in faith, family, and friendships is what I'll say. Had a great upbringing. I'm the oldest of three. I have a younger sister, younger brother. And we spent summers down in Rockport, fall and winter up in outside Fredericksburg, Willow City, Texas, where the family ranch was. And on my mom's side, there's 23 grandchildren. So it was cousin central. Yeah.
Wow.
We just had all these built-in best friends and it was great. You know, growing up was great. But as I got into high school, I started to struggle with a lot of things that young girls struggle with. And back in the early 2000s, it wasn't talked about really like it is today. So specifically, an eating disorder that spanned for several years. You know, my nature is I'm a perfectionist.
Yeah.
And so having control over those things, you know, I went to a toxic route, so to speak. Going into later in high school and stuff, you know, drinking and partying and bad choices in relationships with guys. And into college, I had tried Adderall for the first time.
What year was this?
This was my sophomore year of college. This was 2003.
Okay. Yep.
And when I tried it, it was like the lights came on. Like, this is it. I have arrived. This is my new obsession.
Now, I was told that Adderall was almost like if you were struggling with attention deficit, right? Yeah. Was that kind of the big play for a lot of, is that like, hey, take this if you're struggling to concentrate, if you're struggling to have it? It was kind of like, you know, they would prescribe it in some situations for young adults. Is this correct?
Correct. So that's exactly what it was designed for. It is an ADHD, ADD drug.
Okay.
And if you qualify for that and you really need it, it affects you in the way that it should.
Ah.
For a normal person like me who does not have ADD or ADHD, it's a stimulant, basically.
Okay.
So I had focus. I wasn't hungry, so I didn't have to worry about the eating disorder, food side of things. I was able to tackle all these chores I had put off for days. Study, that was the college allure, is this is what you take to study. And the first time I tried it, I kid you not, I was texting people that same day. Hey, do you know anybody that has this? Do you know anybody that has that? I'll pay whatever they want, you know? And there started over a decade long addiction to Adderall. And if I couldn't get that, I'd do street drugs. It was whatever I could get to get that same effect.
So to talk about the effect, like, cause I've heard about it, but talk about it. Do you feel like energetic? Do you feel like, does it make your, is it a focus thing? What is it exactly?
For somebody who doesn't need it, it jacks you up. And you can, you feel like you can conquer the world.
That would be pretty dangerous.
It would be dangerous.
I could see that being pretty dangerous. Now, if you did have ADHD, if you did have a lack of focus, it wouldn't have the same effect.
So, ironic thing, and we'll get to this later in my story. My 7-year-old daughter has ADHD.
Okay.
And the medication that she is prescribed every day is Adderall.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. And so for somebody who needs it, it slows their brain down because she's already kind of, you know, easily overstimulated, has so many thoughts going at one time. It slows things down and allows her to focus in the way that the drug was designed.
So it's opposite of if somebody, you know, if they're having trouble, it will slow down instead of speed up.
Sure.
That's really interesting.
So that started a over decade long addiction. I still drank. I'd always drank to get drunk. The Adderall, I felt like I could drink longer, stay up later, and I wasn't drunk when really I still was. The demand for my need only grew. And so
in terms of the amount.
That one pill I was taking, that wasn't cutting it. So now we're going to move up to 2, 3, 4, 5.
For the whole day or this across the whole part of the day?
For the entire day.
Okay, gotcha.
That is a lot.
That's a lot.
I don't
have very much experience with Adderall. I've heard that even today, it's still extremely addicted and a lot of people are using it.
So after college, I started my first real job. And I went to my doctor. I knew just what to say to get a prescription. I ticked all the way up to the highest amount. But again, the supply did not meet
what you
my
needed.
Body's demand. So I would supplement. I would buy from friends. I would do whatever I could to get what I needed.
And what if, like, so tell me about a day.
Sure.
You go to work mm-hmm. and you don't have it.
Well,
tell me about one of those days.
If I go into work,
yeah,
because a lot of times I would just call in sick.
Oh, because it was that bad.
Well, it was just, I had no energy. I had no drive. I'd rather just sleep the whole day. And if I did go in, I was super unproductive and just constantly thinking about when am I going to get my next fix? Yeah. Where am I going to get it? How much do I need to fork over? What pharmacy am I going to go to this time? Because I'd have to pharmacy shop because it's a controlled substance. And the mental obsession was all over me.
Yeah.
And I didn't like it, but I couldn't stop.
Yeah. Well, how are you going to stop? Right. Yeah. Yeah. So at what point did anybody along the way, did anybody at work notice? Did they know?
Early on, no.
Nobody knew. What about in college? What about before that in college?
Well, college, everybody did it.
Everybody, okay.
It was, you know, even drinking. Like, I drank to get drunk.
Yeah.
So did
everybody.
You know.
Yeah.
Now, in high school and college, you're not, I don't know that many kids are particularly called a responsible drinker.
So it's hard to tell.
Do you have a problem?
Yes.
Or is this just normal college behavior? And
right.
That's a lot easier to trend towards than the latter. So when I worked in Dallas, it was for a PR firm. I was super excited. It was during the recession. I was an intern.
So it was 2000.
This is 2009.
Nine? Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. 2009. Very demanding. You know, PR is 24/7. The news never sleeps, they say. So I increased. So 5 in the morning to jack me up.
So you had to get up at 5 to start or?
No, I would take 5.
Oh, you
take? I would take 5 Adderall.
At one time?
Yes. So we're talking like 140, 150 milligrams in the morning, which is a lot. I ended up starting to have panic attacks. I ended up in the emergency room one day. They gave me the class of drug that will knock all that out. And
Was it
a benzodiazepine?
Okay, yeah.
So I'm like, surely all that Adderall I'm taking, that had nothing to do with this.
Yeah.
And so I felt okay the next morning. And guess what I did?
Yeah.
I took it. Yeah. I'm like, that was just a one-time thing. That's not going to happen again.
Yeah.
And guess what happened?
Another panic attack.
So then I'm getting prescribed these benzodiazepines.
Which is really rough to get off of those.
Yeah. So really then rough. I'm a human chemistry experiment at that point. I'm taking a bunch of Adderall in the morning to jack myself up. Yeah. And then I need to put that Xanax inside me at 4:30, 5 o'clock.
In order to come down.
So I can bring myself back down.
Could you sleep? What was sleep like during this time?
So sleep was great if I had enough Xanax on hand.
Oh my gosh.
If I ran out of the benzos.
Yeah.
The power of those panic attacks were so paralyzing that I felt like I was going to have a heart attack and die.
Holy cow.
It was miserable.
Do you think this is part of the body basically going like, we cannot sustain this amount of Adderall and like, we've got to do something. Was that kind of like what you think brought those panic attacks on?
For sure. But my addiction was not going to let me believe that was the source.
Yeah.
You know,
I need to take this to counteract this.
Yeah.
And just
my
keep
addiction
going.
Is going to say, you need more Xanax. Yeah. You need more Ativan. You need something that is going to fix this over here and make you feel better because all of a sudden I have to change the way I feel. There's something in here that is void that I'm not able to handle life on life's terms.
Yeah.
And my addiction made me believe that, well, if you don't have this, you can't do this. If you don't have Adderall, don't even bother going into work. You're going to hate it. All you're going to think about all day is, when am I going to get Adderall? I can't do anything without it. Yeah. And then if I ran out of Xanax,
now you can't sleep.
Well, not only not sleep, but the physical pain, angst. I would call my mom in the middle of the night and just ask her to stay on the phone with me until see if I could even fall asleep.
Wow.
They were that bad.
So did this happen in high school? I mean, in college? Did you have any of the panic attacks? That didn't start until later.
That started when I was working in Dallas. Mm. I started losing jobs. And then.
Did they know? Did the office kind of figure it out after a while?
I would say my boyfriend at the time, people were catching on to something is off.
Yeah. Yeah. But, because you didn't talk about it. This is not no one really knew.
This is my secret over here. Yeah. And my excuse is, well, I have a prescription for these things.
Yeah.
You know, so, but, oh, I'm just like physically, I'm in so much pain. Like I have to have this, but nobody knew to the extent that, you know, I find a drug dealer who lives in Houston. And so now I'm getting drugs through the mail. So now I'm committing a felony. So now I'm willing to go to any lengths to get what I need to make me feel better.
Right.
One evening, I was sitting at my apartment and my boyfriend and I at the time, we didn't live together.
Yeah.
And so some days we would go without seeing each other because we both worked and you're tired. And I felt really weird. And I called him and I was like, hey, will you just come over and sit with me? And, you know, I had used the excuse all the time. I don't feel good or I just feel weird, blah, blah, blah. Everybody got so tired of hearing it.
Yeah.
And reluctantly he came. And had he not, I don't know that I'd be sitting in this chair today. I was sitting there and he said all of a sudden, I just looked at him and I'm on the floor having a grand mal seizure.
Oh.
And he calls, you know, 911. They come, they take me to the emergency room. We're waiting for a room and boom, I'm sitting there and I have another one.
Mm-hmm. Whoa.
Yeah. So
had you ever had one before?
No.
Yeah. I was getting chills thinking, I can't imagine obviously God was intervening in that moment that he was there, right? Like I was, because you're right. If he's not there, there's so many things that could go wrong. Okay. So did the doctors kind of have an idea at that point?
So
and they start doing blood work and they start doing everything.
It's more questions at the time, you know, and they see what I'm prescribed and we're getting off of all that. And now we're going to go see the neurologist, you know, weekly. We're going to try to get down to the root of some of this stuff.
Yeah.
I believe, and a lot of us do, that if you don't detox off of certain drugs properly, that can be a result.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, the amount of times that I blacked out, I don't even remember if I ran out of Xanax, but I believe that those were caused by a withdrawal from that, because benzos are a class where if you don't detox properly, that's what happens. And I will tell you, leading up to that and even after the fact, you would think that that would make me go, golly, I should probably stop doing this.
Yeah.
But I couldn't.
Yeah.
So much time goes by that you're like, I'm fine. You know, I can do this.
Yeah.
Like I got everything reinstated and it was through so long, you know, there were so many times that I would just put God on the shelf and it's like, hey man, I got this.
Yeah.
You know? And then all of a sudden it's those like Hail Mary, desperate mercy prayers when you're just, you know, I'm in the middle of a panic attack. I'm in the middle of something so excruciating that you're like, God, please, you know, please make this go away. I'll never do this. I'll never do that. And it's like, that's not how it works.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? So the doctors still at that point, your boyfriend at the time, he didn't know. And then the doctors didn't know at that point. Really?
Nobody knew, again, to the extent.
Okay.
Because as addicts and alcoholics, we got to keep these secrets close to the vest. Like, and that's what keep us sick. Secrets keep us sick.
Yeah, for sure.
So this is 2011 and somehow in 2012, I will never understand why, but that boyfriend proposed.
Yeah.
And became my fiance.
Why do you say it like that?
Because I was a hot mess express.
Yeah.
Another, you know, God intervening because he would, a couple of years later, go on to truly save my life.
Yeah.
So this behavior continued, you know, into 2015. And in the spring of 2015, his name's Steven, he intercepted my last pill package.
That came in the mail?
Yeah, my drugs that came in the mail.
And he didn't know. He just found it.
Well, he found it. Yeah. That wasn't the first time he had found one.
Okay.
But again, as addicts, we are master manipulator, charmer, salespeople. You know, I was able to weasel my way out of stuff. And again, oh, that was a mistake. Like, I don't know. You know, we come up with every excuse in the book.
Yeah.
But he said, he flushed him down the toilet and said, that's it. He packed a bag. He left. And since I'm super normal, I text my drug dealer and told him, oh, you just flushed him. Can you send me some more?
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm begging him not to leave, but he's going to leave anyways. And so, you know, what's the point?
Right.
The next day I'm sitting at my house and I look out the window and I see Steven, my sister, and my parents walking up the steps.
Oh.
And I said probably a really bad word out loud.
Yeah.
And I knew the jig was up. And they came in and said, you got two options.
Yeah.
Everything you see in front of you is either gone or you go pack a bag and you're going to go spend 90 days. We're going to go to detox, spend 90 days in rehab.
Yeah.
And the first question I have is, well, can I at least drink after this?
Yeah.
I'll stop doing the pills. And they're like, go pack your freaking bag.
Yeah.
Like, so I spent a week in detox. And then I went to a treatment facility where I would unknowingly spend the next 4 months.
Oh, wow. What do you mean unknowingly? You didn't know you would be there that long or?
No. Because, you know, they pitch it as it's a 90-day program.
Oh.
And within a few days, the girls are like, oh, well, you know that most people here get a fourth month, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm sorry, what?
This was
not disclosed.
Yeah.
And I'm going to, you know, fight the fight to make sure that that doesn't happen.
So what would you say? I mean, just because we're, I think this is so good. And I, Lisa, I really appreciate your openness with this because obviously this is not an easy story to tell. Right. But I think God has given you this story to tell for a reason.
Yes.
Because somebody listening to this is struggling right now. They are in the middle of addiction and they may be listening to this and going, well, yeah, okay, great. She went through it. Okay, right, great. And she got help. Okay, great. But I don't need help.
Right.
What would you tell them?
Well, I'd say take a good hard look at what you're doing. Yeah. You know, I fought against the fact that I was an addict in treatment for 6 weeks because my addiction, my use didn't look like everybody else's. Well, I'm not shooting heroin in my veins. You know, these are legal drugs. I had a prescription for them. I'm this white collar, you know, addict over here. I've never been homeless. I'm not, you know, this isn't court mandated. You know, I separated myself. I looked at all the differences from the similarities. And so here you ask yourself, well, do normal people take 150 milligrams Adderall in the morning?
Yeah.
Do normal people get drugs through the mail? Do normal people spend thousands upon thousands of dollars for drugs or alcohol? Do normal people get in a fender bender once a month, lose jobs? I mean, you just start stacking things on top and go, I don't know if that's normal.
Yeah. Those are all good questions.
Right.
To kind of like really challenge yourself to see. So that first week of detox, I would imagine, you know, obviously I think for anybody that's thinking about, oh, I need a change. I need to stop. And that first week has to be of all of them. That has to be one of the worst, I would imagine.
It was, brutal towards the end. At the first few days, I was still able to get whatever I could to make sure that I didn't go into a severe withdrawal.
Yeah.
So I would just sleep through the whole thing and, you know, was very resistant. And then as I'm starting to come out of the fog, realize what's really about to happen.
Yeah.
You know, I'm about to really get in deep, doing some hard work. And
after that week ends, you were already away from the house. You were in a treatment facility where you stayed 24/7.
Yes.
Where you weren't going home or anything of that nature.
No,
you're staying. Okay.
Yeah.
Was this local? Was it anywhere?
It was outside of Austin. And, my best friend and I like to say that we were kidnapped and thrown in jail without the key.
Mm.
And truly, my personality, that's what I needed.
Yeah.
You know, this wasn't, I didn't volunteer to go do this.
Yeah.
It was kind of like a thief in the night. Go pack your bag and this is where we're going. And a lot of times that's the best route because then there's not a lot of wiggle room and time to say, to talk yourself and to talk your loved ones out of it. So.
Right. Because I would imagine at that point you'd become, pretty adept to, you know, figure out a way to, hey, you know, I'm okay. I'm fine.
Yeah.
And you'd figure out that way. Okay. So you go, you're going through treatment. And then when you said it took 6 weeks to admit it.
Well, yeah. And in six weeks, I found out I'm getting that fourth month. Oh, and by the way, you're going to sober living in Austin for 3 months after. And I was furious. I was crying. My husband doesn't love me. I'm playing the victim again. You know, this is ridiculous. Like, but that was the turning point for me. Cause again, it was like, the jig is up. Like all this journaling, God, please don't give me a fourth month. You know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to tell these people what they want to hear. I'm going to, you know, go through the motions.
Mm-hmm.
I finally was able to just do the work.
And so when you say do the work, I think that's important because I've heard that before. A buddy of mine, Johnny, shout out to Johnny Morris. He runs a sober living house. He has two of them. And I've heard him say that you got to do the work.
Right.
And when you say that, I think it's good to explain that to someone that may be in that situation of addiction right now. What does that mean? Obviously they have to be willing to put themselves in a place where they know they need to change. But then it's like, okay, now let's do the work.
Right.
Talk about that.
Well, it can mean different things. But for me, it was like, get out of your own way and start listening to the suggestions of others. Where I was specifically, we went through the 12 steps. So it was also like, stop going through the motions and like, let's actually dig into some of this stuff and just let go.
Yeah,
I went in a shell of myself, a skeleton, just like no color, black eyes, just, you know, like literally a shell. And it took a full month where one of my best friends came in and we would go to a meeting. We're on the bus and there's no talking. You know, I mean, this place was strict. It was boot camp. It was no messing around.
Yeah.
And we're coming back and she's telling me this story. And I laughed, like belly laughed out loud. And everybody turned and looked like, is that Liesl?
Yeah.
She has barely spoken a word in the entire month that she's been here.
Yeah.
And it was all of a sudden, like I started to come alive again.
Is this where you felt like you had finally gotten so far away from the chemical reactions of the Adderall, the chemical reaction of everything that you were taking, to where you can almost start to sense the world around you in a natural way, natural state?
Yeah, little by little. You know, it's definitely not overnight. And I had put so many years into so many unhealthy behaviors that there were a lot of layers to peel back and a lot of time to really start to dig in. But all of a sudden I'm given the tools to figure out how to cope and deal without substances to rely on. And it's relying on, you know, a higher power, which for me is God, and referring back to the steps and the things that I've been taught. And what I will say is a lot of these treatment centers, there is a recipe that they have come up with to know what works. And so I fought against it for so long. And looking back now, I'm like, oh, they know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, being able to take suggestions. I went home at the end of 2015. And I will tell you that that first year of sobriety is excruciating.
Okay.
It is tough. I felt like a newborn, you know, trying to figure out who I am as a sober person, going through all those first time being sober at a wedding, at New Year's, at a party for this, and just so uncomfortable in my skin, in my own skin.
Yeah.
Really. So it's like, because everything that I would use to make myself feel comfortable has, it's gone.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what was that? So how did you cope? What held you to that sobriety? Because obviously it's not easy.
It's not easy.
You know?
Yeah. And I am around alcohol. My husband drinks, family, friends, and not that wasn't necessarily my first drug of choice, mm-hmm. but it was still something that I did all the time.
Right.
You know, counseling, continuing to go to meetings, having a sober coach to work with, and then ultimately motherhood.
Okay, so let's talk. So when did you have your first child? At what year?
So we got pregnant with Sawyer in June of 2016. So okay, I had been home about 6 months at the time, and I will tell you that first of all, I loved pregnancy.
Yeah,
I am one of those weirdos that like I just loved the way it felt, just the whole process. Yeah. I even like birthing children. I think it's like, you know, you just feel like this rock star, like this is just powerful.
It's superhuman.
It's superhuman.
Yeah, it's superhuman. That's for sure.
I mean, I'm a freak in that regard.
I love
totally.
It. Yeah.
But I found it. I found my purpose.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
That's really, really cool. So you were almost, when your first child was born, were you almost a year sober?
I was over a year.
Over a year.
Yes.
Okay.
She and the, you know, God's irony as well. My first Mother's Day was actually my sober birthday.
No
way. For my
2 years
sober. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So that was cool. And we ended up having our second Piper in July of 2018.
Okay.
And then our third daughter, Charlie, was born in September 2021.
Okay. COVID baby.
Yes, she was. I actually had COVID.
No way.
When, you know.
So could anybody, is this during the time where nobody could come in there?
Was
this,
but it was kind of nice with it being your third. Like you already knew kind of what to do. And
okay.
What I will say though is, what a blessing that my children will never know who I was prior to getting sober.
And that,
but the relationship with my husband, that was not an easy road to navigate for a long time.
Yeah.
Not only are we having to kind of get to know each other again as like, you know, me being this sober person, but then going into parenting for the first time, challenges upon challenges.
Yeah.
And, it's not an easy road for couples who don't go through some of the things that we went through.
Right.
But I can honestly say I will be 9 years sober in May. And for the longest time, I longed to get back to that 15-year-old girl before all the madness started.
Mm.
And at 39 years old, I found her.
Yeah. Isn't that beautiful?
Found her.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's amazing. And how many people right now are in that space where they want to get back? They want to go back to the person they were before, you know?
Yeah.
But they don't have hope. They don't have hope. They don't have anybody like your husband, Steven.
Yes.
They don't have anybody like Steven that just says, okay, it's over, right? Like, let's go.
Yep.
Which is a shout out to Steven because that's a, you know, for him to stand by and want to see you get the help you needed. And then now you look at the beauty of the book that's written and the three children that you have now. It's like, that may not have happened had you not said, okay, I'll try, you know? Because I'm sure there were parts of you that are like, I'm not going.
For sure.
In the beginning.
Sure. Yeah. So we'll get to this book right here because this book is probably the reason you and I are sitting here talking today. So
for sure.
After our third daughter, Charlie, was born, my mom was over helping, you know, often with the newborn stage, and she would mention what a good dad my husband Steven is, and that he reminds her of my dad and how he is with my sister and I, my brother and I. And she said, he's just such a good girl dad. Mm. You know, you need to do something for him. You write something, call it the girl dad, you know, we'll just put it together. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds great. I have a 2-month-old over here. Let me just find some time to work on this. And one night he was gone and I was just sitting on the couch watching TV and I started thinking about things and I started typing everything in my phone. And as I wrote the text, I knew I had actual photos of him doing those activities with our girls or a memory of me and my dad.
Yeah.
And so I put it together as a photo book, gave it to him for Christmas. Tears were shed.
Yeah.
Everybody loved it. I got with an illustrator and this is what we have today.
And what year was this? So that the first one was printed.
The first one was printed in 2022.
Okay.
And from the jump, I wanted to, I asked the opinion of my website girl and others. I said, I'm going to tell you a little bit about my story.
Yeah.
I'd like to include it in there somewhere, but let me know your thoughts.
Yeah.
And everybody was pretty blown away by it.
Yeah.
And my goal in all of that was to say that what you see on these pages, this, our life is not some shiny, perfect fairy tale. Yeah. I want to be real and relatable and raw with people of like, this is the beauty of the blessings that have come from some extreme struggle and sacrifice.
Yeah.
You know, this is real life stuff that we've been through.
Yeah.
And so the funniest thing is this book is not only bringing joy to families when they read it, and I've had grown men come up to me crying because they sat down with their grown daughters and just went down memory lane and just how much joy it's bringing their family.
Yep.
But it's also serving as this vessel and a catalyst for me to get out and share my story in a way that I never have.
Yeah.
And this isn't something I've been ashamed to talk about, but I'm not going to like go to dinner with some friends and be like, all right, guys, settle in. You ready for this?
Yeah, for sure.
I'm happy to talk about it, but I definitely don't ever want to force anything on anyone or make anybody feel uncomfortable. And so we have this really cool book and
more
to come. And my goal and my hope is that if any part of my story can inspire somebody else, cool. You know, like this is, there's some really cool stuff out there, and there, and God really works some miracles and uses parts of our life and things in different ways. And
yeah.
So it's cool to see. I'm kind of just riding this wave right now. And
I love it. I'm curious though, because I've always heard that when someone goes through this idea of addiction, there's kind of like a replacement, right? Like you find something to plug into that space of what the maybe the Adderall or maybe the other what was the other one?
Xanax.
And you say, okay, I've got to replace it with something. You know what I mean? And where along the lines did you find that replacement of what kind of locked in there to give you the ability to go, I don't need this anymore?
Well, again, recovery looks different for everybody. Mm-hmm. And everybody does what works best for them. I think time, really, and kind of navigating through life. Like exercise has always been something that's important to me.
Mm-hmm.
Again, motherhood was something new that came in, and really trying to be a little more gentle on myself.
Mm.
You kind of gain this perspective after going through something like this that this isn't, you know, you can't go to school for this. I went to the school of hard knocks to kind of figure some of this out. So I don't know that there was a lot of one specific replacement. It was kind of just trying to figure out in these different areas of my life what works and what doesn't.
Mm.
And again, it takes time. So I will say though that, again, going back to the recipe that a lot of these facilities have, there is some serious armor of God on me because, as I mentioned earlier on, my 7-year-old takes the very drug that I was addicted to for 15 years every morning.
And you see it.
And guess who's in charge of the prescription, puts it in her hand every morning and hands it to her.
Mm.
Without even a thought.
Mm.
That is a miracle.
I didn't even think about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when you said that earlier. Wow.
And that apparently ADHD and that kind of stuff is genetic.
Yeah.
We don't have it in our family.
Yeah.
So again, God's like, here you go.
Yeah.
What are you going to do with this?
Wow. That's so that's powerful.
Yeah.
Well, it just shows that when we do the work, as you mentioned earlier, if we're willing to do the work, massive miracles can happen.
Sure.
And people can change.
Right.
In a massive way, beyond probably what you thought was possible. I would imagine when you stepped into that first day, and if you were to be able to see into the future, to see where you're at right now, sitting here with this book, three children, and your husband, been married now for how long?
It'll be 11 years in June.
11 years in June. When you walked in that facility, did you see this even as a possibility of a future?
Absolutely not. Mm. Absolutely not. And that's, I remember sitting in meetings and people talking about my life, these things happen like that I could have never dreamed of. And I remember sitting there going like, well, that sounds cool, but is that real? Like, can that actually really happen? And it is. And the other thing I want to get across too is I'm never fully recovered.
Mm.
This is a lifelong journey and life is still super messy. And yeah. I am not perfect. And that's just the way God wants me. And yeah. there's freedom in that.
Yeah.
And I don't have anything figured out. You know, this is, I'm still living life on life's terms. And, so, you know, it's, there will always be challenges and things to go through along the way. And I believe that's the way God designed it.
Yeah.
And fortunately for me, I was able to learn some really hard lessons early on in life to yeah. where I still have the better part of my life to live, not miserable like I was.
Yeah. And fortunate that you survived all of those,
absolutely.
you know, situations, yeah. right?
Right.
That from the seizures and whatnot. There's a mom listening right now. I would imagine there's maybe a mom, there's a dad, or there's somebody that's listening. Maybe they're single and they're in the storm.
Right.
They're in the storm. They know that something has to change, because I would imagine there were moments where you knew things had to change,
right?
When you were in college, when you were, you know, in Dallas and with the PR firms and losing jobs. I would imagine there were moments of where you knew that you needed to change. So if you could speak maybe something of encouragement to them, what would you say?
I would say, bring the darkness out into the light. Mm. Like I mentioned, secrets keep us sick. And there is a power in being vulnerable and saying things out loud, because then they lose their power.
Mm.
It is okay to not be okay.
Yeah.
And to say, I feel like I'm dying inside right now. I am miserable. And this is what I'm doing. And I don't like it. And I want to change, but I don't know how. I don't know what I'm doing.
That's powerful.
I'm actually, I have helped some friends and family along the way, which is part of, you know, this program. We are uniquely qualified to help somebody else in need.
Yeah.
And through this book, I have had grown men. I had a complete stranger send me a Facebook message after a TV appearance saying, I just bought your book for my 6'9" rugged girl dad. And I loved what you said, and I'll have 7 years in July, whatever, you know. It's just, you don't have to live like this.
Yeah.
You know, and it's hard, and that's okay. And, again, there is freedom in imperfection.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That's probably, that secrets keep us sick. Like that will remain as something that even that I would want to talk with my son about.
Definitely.
Right? Like just that idea, if you know, secrets, when you keep them and you hold on to them, they will make you sick.
Yeah.
And you got to bring it out. So bring the darkness to the light is kind of the idea, right? I love that. That's so powerful. And so how can people get this amazing book? What's the best way for people to order The Girl Dad? How can they get it, Liesl?
Go to thegirldadbook.com.
Okay.
Click buy now.
Buy now.
And
buy now.
Add it to your cart. And I will send you a signed copy.
Oh, that's cool.
They make a great gift for a dad of one girl, all girls, or a daughter to give to her father.
Yeah.
With Father's Day coming up.
Yes.
And really, it's kind of an evergreen gift with baby showers. You know, just think of somebody that you think it would bring some joy to.
100%.
It rhymes. It's easy to get through. So it's not one of those books you open and there's a, you know, half page long paragraph when you're trying to sit down and read to the kiddos. So it's fun for adults and kiddos.
Now the process to get here, right? To get to a physical, I would imagine this process was not easy.
No, it is not for the faint of heart. Again, this whole thing was a total accident.
Yeah.
But I tried to navigate this as best I could. Writing and illustrating it, that's the easy, fun part.
Yeah.
Because I self-published, I basically had to teach myself everything about navigating that world and pricing and printing and all the technical, not so fun stuff.
It's no fun.
It is no fun. Yeah. I made so many mistakes along the way.
Yeah.
I mean, just money's flying out the door because I'm flying blind. I've never done this before. Yeah. But I was always persistent on trying to find others in the industry who could offer me some insight and knowledge. And I feel like I finally got connected with some of those people within the last 9 months, one of them being your lovely wife, Christina Martinez.
Awesome.
We'll give her a shout out.
Yeah.
And others. And this second edition copy is a labor of love, and it's a really cool gift for people.
It's a great gift. Great gifts. If you've got a dad out there that's about to have a little girl, this is the book you need to get them. You need to get them. So wrapping up, I how did you and Christina meet? How do I not know that story?
You know, it's a whole God thing.
Yeah.
Through a mutual friend. And then I've joined this committee for a super cool event happening in May.
Yes.
All you golfers out there need to check out the Super Bowl of Golf. If you want to come play with a retired NFL player and raise some money for some local charities, it's a great event. So I got, you know, just through the grapevine, and then here we are, and now we're doing this, and now you and I are sitting here, and it's just funny the way God works and make, you know, San Antonio is the biggest small town.
Yes, it is
out there. So it's been fun. And for me to just be open of let's meet this person, getting myself out there, and you just never know where an opportunity lies or a really cool relationship.
No, for sure. For sure. The golf tournament's going to be a lot of fun. We did it last year. It's at TPC on the Oaks course.
Yeah.
It's a blast. Right. Were you part of it last year?
I actually was not.
You're not. No. Okay. Yeah. It was so much fun. May 6th. It's
May
a tournament, 6th, right?
Is
May
the 6th. Tournament,
it's on a Monday. And if you haven't gotten a team, get a team now. It's a great opportunity to play at TPC. And as Alicia was saying, you get an NFL football player. I mean, how cool is that?
Yeah.
You know, an ex NFL football player. Lisa, thank you so much for sharing your story. I there's so much here to unpack that people, how could they best reach out to you? If someone's like, I just need somebody to talk to. What would be a way that the Instagram, is there a way that they can reach out via Instagram?
Yeah, I have a personal Instagram account, and then the Girl Dad book is my, you know, business account.
Yeah.
I am an open book, and I am here to, you know, reveal anything that could be of use or help to somebody else. So reach out and we can exchange contact information and That's it.
Well, I'm sure there's going to be somebody that's going to reach out that may need to bring something from darkness to light. That may need to that is just literally going to say, "Hey, I've been living with this secret and it's keeping me sick." And and that is so powerful. And that will resonate me forever. I've never heard that before. Mm-hmm. You know, I never heard that before. So that will resonate. Thank you so much for being on TM3 Impact. Again, if you want to see this amazing book, you want to go to The Girl Dad.
TheGirlDadBook.com. And we've got something for you mamas coming out later this spring.
Oh, yay.
So stay tuned.
Okay, awesome. Another book that's coming out for moms. Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Stay tuned. Make sure you go. And we'll have links to the website on this. This will be on YouTube.
Thanks.
This is going to be on our Apple iTunes and Spotify. So super excited to have you on the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
All righty. Take care.
Thanks.